Good morning and welcome to Black Book Talk. This is our December show. We were scheduled to have a guest, but with some scheduling conflicts coming along, instead, you just have the three of us. I am Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
Obie Hill, Black Book Talk.
All right, so it looks like Obie has some magazines in front of him, and I have some children's books, books that would make good gifts for that niece or nephew in your life or just any young person that likes to read. One of my wonderful old favorites is Everett Anderson's Christmas Coming. It's written by Lucille Clifton, who died a few years ago, sadly, and it's illustrated by Evangeline Ness. Everett Anderson is always doing something, and this is a great book for me to read to the students, and it's a great book for me to read in the evenings at home when I had young people there. December 20th. Five more days. Everett Anderson loves the sound of Merry Christmas all around, and bells ringing, and people singing, and Mama smiling her secret smile, and winking at him once in a while. And then the next page is beautiful illustration, complete with the black Santa Claus, who is wearing purple. December 21st, snow. In 14A, we live between the snow that falls on downer lives, and from our window, we can watch the early part that mists and flies and never the wet and slushy one. Oh, 14A is a blessing, says Everett Anderson. And it goes on like that until it's Christmas night, December 25th. 14A is up so high, our Christmas bounces off the sky and shines on all the downer ones. Merry Christmas to them, says Mama. Merry Christmas from me, says Everett Anderson. So it's a lovely book, wonderful illustrations, and just right for a gift for a young person. I have another book called What a Morning, The Christmas Story in Black Spirituals. It's selected, and it was The spirituals were selected and edited by John Langstaff, and it's illustrated by Ashley Bryan. I have seen a lot of things illustrated by Ashley Bryan that has to do with songs. So inside the book, there are verses from the Bible, Revelation 2:28. And I will give him the morning star. And there's a beautiful lamb on the page. And the pages are bordered. And then you go into the songs. Each song has a page that illustrates it opposite the actual song. And there's another verse. My Lord, what a morning. For unto us a child is born. Unto us a son is given. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Prince of Peace, Isaiah 9:6. And then the song follows, My Lord, What a Morning, the music and the lyrics. And it goes on with Mary Had a Baby, in the same pattern, lyrics, music, and the beautiful picture. And it has eight songs, ending with Behold That Star, and an infant in what might be straw with some African motif around it. Beautiful, beautiful book. What a Morning, The Christmas Story in Black Spirituals, selected and edited by John Langstaff, illustrated by Ashley Bryan, arrangements for singing and piano by John Andrew Ross. And it is published by Margaret K. McElderry Books. And that's Macmillan Publishing, a subsidiary of Macmillan Publishing.
Well, those books are beautifully illustrated, that's for sure. And keeping in mind, not only is this time of the year where we begin to really look at Christmas, but also Kwanzaa. And I'm sure that there will be Kwanzaa celebrations going on as well. I'd like to talk about a book again that I've mentioned a few times on here. It's called Light from Ancient Africa. It's a critical contribution to whom might be called the re-Africanization of a psychology project. And it was within this project that we came to realize that the notion of human psychology and the remains of the African invention. And in this book, Naeem Akbar provides the reader with a clear and concise understanding of African, that is, Kemetic origins of psychology, and he provokes us to think deeply about the real meaning that Africa gave to psychology. And it provides the insightful guidelines to modern-day implications and applications in the field. Now, Naeem Akbar wrote this book, and it's by Minds Productions and Associates out of Tallahassee, Florida. And its book is written, first printed in July of 94, and it's in its fourth printing now. Very, very interesting book. It has a lot of implications in terms of the Christian religion and origins of ancient Kemetic or African thought systems. And that's, again, Light from Ancient Africa.
Another book that I thought would be a good idea for this season is by Mary Hoffman. She's the person who writes the Grace books, the one in which Grace wants to be Peter Pan in the school play, and the children tell her that she can't, and her grandmother tells her that she can do anything she wants to. And then she practices and practices, and her grandmother takes her to the ballet, and eventually she comes back to the school and she tries out for Peter Pan, and her moves are just splendid. And they choose her to be Peter Pan. Well, this book by Mary Hoffman is not about Grace at all, because there's also another Grace book that we do in fourth grade in our reading book. It's a play. But this one is called An Angel Just Like Me. The pictures are by Cornelius Van Wright and Yinghua Wu. The pictures are angelic. It starts with, it was nearly Christmas, and everyone in the family was busy except for Tyler. LaBelle and Marcy were putting up holly and ivy. Their mother and father were bringing in a big Christmas tree, and TJ was sorting through the old box of decorations. Even Simone was sticking paper chains together. Tyler was the only one with nothing to do, so he teased Bagel. And Bagel is the dog, of course. "Oh, me," said TJ after a while. "Look at this angel." Everyone stopped what they were doing and looked at the angel. It was broken in half. "We have to get a new one," sighed Mom. Tyler picked it up. "Why do angels all look like girls?" he asked. "Can't boys be angels?" But no one answered. "Why do they all have gold hair?" asked Tyler. "And why are they always pink? Aren't there any black angels?" "Good question," said Dad. "There may be, but I've never seen one." "I'm going to find one," announced Tyler. "I'm going to get a new angel for my tree, one that looks just like me." And the story goes on to tell how Tyler goes out and finds the black angel for the tree. And as we know, with any book that we're reading to children, he is successful. This book is called An Angel Just Like Me. It's written by Mary Hoffman, and it's published by Penguin Books.
Well, Joining us now, Emma, is our third member, Patricia Welch.
Hi, I'm happy. Hi, it's great to be here. I'm just coming back from the East Coast, and my mom's 85th birthday, and wasn't sure I was going to be able to join you this morning. Since I thought that we were having a guest, I don't have a lot of items to share today, but there is one that I do want to talk about. It's a book called Disintegration, The Splintering of Black America, and it's by Eugene Robinson, and many people know Eugene Robinson as being a journalist, a print journalist, but also someone who's a commentator on a number of television shows. I think he's a regular on MSNBC now. But at any rate, this book is about his belief that there is no longer one, quote-unquote, Black America, that no one can speak for Black America because there are at least four Black Americas, and he breaks these groups up, and he explains what they are. I'm not sure if I agree with him on everything because I think at one point he has made a statement. He goes back, and I'll explain this a little later, and he contradicts himself. But he says that there are now four Black Americas, a mainstream middle-class majority with a full ownership stake in American society. I suspect that he would think that all three of us are in this group just because of generational issues, what we've experienced in life. There is an abandoned majority, frequently known as the underclass, people who, in many cases, through no fault of their own, just because of the circumstances of their birth and where they live and what the economic situation in the world is, who are in poverty and who may never escape poverty. And within the book, he says that the abandoned minority has less hope of escaping poverty and dysfunction than at any time since Reconstruction's crushing end. There is a small transcendent elite with enormous wealth, power, and influence that, according to him, even white folks have to genuflect to. Of course, our president would be in this group, the African-Americans who are heads of major corporations. He describes a party where, you know, first he just says, you know, you come in and you see this person and that person, and then you understand that this is a Washington, D.C. party, and no matter what the stated goal, that many people are here to see and get to know and be known by a woman who has a major role in D.C. politics. As it turns out, it's someone who is one of Obama's cabinet members. But what is distinctive is that while there are white people at this party, the party is hosted by and attended primarily by a very elite, wealthy, influential group of African Americans. And for the first time, I'm sure since Reconstruction, and actually never before has there been such a power group. He also has a third group, which are actually two groups. This is the emergent group. The two groups that make up this group are individuals of mixed race heritage and communities of recent Black immigrants. And he talks about the fact that while I think there's sort of an East Coast, there used to be sort of an East Coast, West Coast kind of dichotomy, that someone who was born on the West Coast said that when they went to school on the East Coast, that people didn't talk that much about biraciality. It was just like somebody was light, you know, that their family, they probably there was some mixture, but they were absolutely Black people, just perhaps very, very light-skinned Black people. And I remember in growing up, there were people in our community who probably could pass for white, but we knew they weren't, and we didn't say they were biracial. We just said they were light. That was just it, and you kept on stepping. But nowadays, there's more attention to the particulars of a person's ethnic or racial background, and this whole group of biracial Americans are a force to be contended with, and they're a growing force, and they do not identify primarily as Black. So there's that issue to contend with. And I thought it was very interesting in talking about the emerging group of immigrants, particularly African immigrants, that his research shows that the most highly educated immigrant group, higher than Asian immigrants, higher than Pacific Rim, higher than European immigrants, the most highly educated group of immigrants coming to this country are from Africa. He talks about a man who is he's the attendant at his health club. So he is there essentially to provide towels and whatever. This man is educated and had a very, I'm sure, profitable and well-respected position back in his home country. He was from an East African country. I'm not sure, Somalia or Ethiopia. But he showed Robinson a letter that had been written by his teenage daughter to the president. I mean, well-crafted, beautiful, beautiful letter. And you know, this is a youngster who's like straight-A student, and she will do well. And what Robinson says is that no matter what economic or status setbacks these groups come these groups suffer when they come to this country, that their background, their success, their understanding of what is important in terms of family and education is all focused on their children. And while they may not have the same status that they had in their country, their children will. And when I think of all the awards, luncheons, or whatever, you know, all the rubber chicken affairs that I've gone to over the past umpteen years, if there has been a scholarship involved, especially East Africans, but children of African descent whose parents were native-born Africans make up a large proportion of the children who get these scholarships, so that their family background and their family values and their family experiences will prevent them from being in the abandoned minority. So it's a fascinating book. Now, but he also talks about the fact there's one example of someone who is in the transcendent elite group, and they still have problems getting a cab. So he wants to say that there are people for whom race is not an issue. But as he goes through the book, it seems to me that he still says, for people of clear African descent, absolutely, race is still an issue when you see the problems. Well, I'll just say how people have behaved and misbehaved relative to our new president, that I would still say race is still an issue in this country. But still, it's a fascinating book, Disintegration, The Splintering of Black America by Eugene Robinson. I highly recommend to anybody who wants some thought-provoking reading.
Who is this Eugene Robinson? What's his background?
As I said, if you watch TV news over the years, you have seen Eugene Robinson. You've probably seen him on PBS roundtables. You've seen him on MSNBC. I think he's currently a commentator on MSNBC now. He has written, I am not sure, I think that he has written over the years for the Washington Post, but he is a journalist of many years standing and wide recognition and respect in the journalistic community. So you might not know his name, but if he were to walk in here, you have seen him, definitely. So he's a person of great credibility and great thoughtfulness. And again, I don't necessarily agree with everything he said, but some of it is true. I mean, some of it just kind of
What category does he place himself in, for instance?
Oh, I'm sure he puts himself in the mainstream. People who have lived through the civil rights movement, because he says, you know, your life experiences will determine or at least influence your worldview. That he grew up in a small town in either North or South Carolina. I mean, he grew up in a fairly solid working class black community. You know, his father had gone to the University of Michigan. Because he lived there at the time, I'm sure. He encouraged his son to go there, and so he did. And he was saying that, you know, when his father took him to the campus, the things that his father wanted him to be impressed with were not the things that he was impressed with. He went there during the 70s, and, you know, it was this whole radical movement, and his life had been that of a fairly well-protected black kid. So, you know, all this radical stuff, you know, he talked about radical lesbians who were doing street theater and Students for a Democratic Society. And he said, you know, his dad was like, and you can go to this school and get that degree. And he was like, wow, this is fascinating. And that is when he realized that he wanted to be a journalist, because he enjoyed watching and reporting things were happening.
Could he be the son of Max Robinson?
No. Too old for that.
Okay.
Too old for that, no. But, you know, he grew up in a predominantly black community, probably lived during the early years of his life in an integrated community. He is now raising his children in what is predominantly white community. So again, their perceptions, their experiences will by definition be different from his, because they have grown up in a different world. And that is something that has to be acknowledged. We see it in a lot of youngsters who, I see a lot of black folks, a lot of younger black folks, and they know that, you know, they're black and they accept it. But it's just not the same kind of I am black first and other things afterwards. And I think that's a very good thing, that they're seeing themselves more as citizens of this country and hopefully citizens of the world. And that makes you look at things differently. I have a friend who has two lovely daughters, both of whom are marrying men from Ghana, both of whom have graduate degrees. They're doing well. Their husbands-to-be are doing well. And I'm sure they will live sometime in this country and live sometime in Ghana. And I thought, yeah, that's right. These are young women who are meeting men to whom education has been important, and they will do well. I don't know if they'll be transcendence, but they'll certainly be upper mainstream.
Excellent. I was thinking, as you were saying that, about listening to a speaker a few years ago who said that when your mom was pregnant with you, she didn't know whether you were going to be a girl or boy. She didn't know if you'd be healthy or not. She didn't know if you'd grow up to get a great education or if you'd listen to her, but she did know you were black. Mm-hmm. And I thought, first and foremost, she knew that.
And that meant something. It meant something in terms of how you would be reared.
Yes.
It meant something in terms of what opportunities parents foresaw for you.
His predictions then would be there would be no need for black book talk in about 30 years.
You know something? He's not predicting it, but based, yeah, projected on what he said, maybe not. Absolutely not. It would just be good books,
yes,
by great people, and hopefully among them would be books by African-American authors. I mean, the hope is that there would be no need for it because there would be the recognition that, you know, there's great work being produced by everybody. But until such time, it is our mission to make sure people know this.
It's like the works of St. Augustine. I think I was a teenager before I knew St. Augustine was black. There was no need to identify him as being a black saint.
But didn't it mean something to you when you found that out?
Please.
That's right. That's the generation that we're from. I was like, yes. You know, I want to mention something else. I was asked to do, among other people, this was a library event, to do favorite books of 2010. And it occurs to me this is the December program. So I want to just run through some of the titles, most of which are ones that we've either talked about or we've interviewed the authors. But I'm Still Standing, From Captive U.S. Soldier to Free Citizen, My Journey by Shoshana Johnson with M.C. Doyle. Shoshana Johnson being the first African-American woman who was taken as a prisoner of war in Iraq. And, you know, just what the experience was like, since most people heard the name Jessica Lynch far more than hers, but just a great story. Also, Street Shadows, A Memoir of Race, Rebellion, and Redemption by Gerald Walker, who we spoke to about a month or two ago. You know, I mean, I just thought about his parents. I love the idea of his parents, you know, poor, black, blind, involved in what some people might say a religious cult, and yet they produced, what, 5 or 6 children who ultimately all did extremely well. So in terms of inspirational reading, you can't beat it. The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration by Isabel Wilkerson, who we interviewed last month, which is like, you know, I described it as being the book of my heart. It is still my favorite book at the moment. I can't believe a 700
Is that book
page.
In the library right now?
Of course.
How could he ask a question like that?
Okay, and then for, let me see, also, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, though it's not by an African-American author. It is certainly about an African-American subject. Henrietta Lacks, a poor Southern tobacco farmer whose immortal human cells have been grown in cultures that are still alive today, though she's been dead for about 60 years. People have been making money off of this woman for about 60 years and were about to make money off of her family when they found out about it and just said, wait a minute, what did you do to our mother and what are you doing to us? So in terms of medical practices, profit in the medical industry, a fascinating book. Obamistan, Land Without Racism, Your Guide to the New America by the wonderful and witty Damali, and an insightful Damali Ayo. Like, what would it be, what will the world be after November 4th, meaning the election of President Obama? Written soundly tongue-in-cheek, but great book. Let's see. And then in terms of fiction, just a few of the titles that I mentioned. Excuse me. Secrets of a Soap Opera Diva, a novel by Victoria Rowell, known to many of us as the wonderful Drusilla, former member of the Young and the Restless TV show cast. And also The Help by Catherine Stockett, which is about 3 ordinary women who take an extraordinary step and what it means when women decide to stand up to racism, decide to stand up to personal oppression. This is a book that everybody's talking about, and I can't wait till it comes out in paperback so that we can purchase it in the library for one of our book discussion groups. Not as much fiction this time, which is amazing given how much I love fiction, but we had a restriction of 10 books, and for a change, my nonfiction selections were better. So that's it in terms of books for me.
Well, you mentioned in books, I'd like to mention a couple other things. First of all, the 20th edition of the African American Business Directory is coming out, and I'm looking forward to that, as well as 2 newspapers, one that has been in operation for 35 years, That is the Scanner. And also one publication, 41 years now, and that's the Portland Observer.
Wow.
And these are weeklies, and I think we really should look at them.
They're weekly, they're free, they are chock full of information that you're not going to get anyplace else. And I love that usually in each issue they have book reviews and other cultural things, but I just love going in and I look and say, okay, I didn't know about that book. So this is great. Where can you get the African-American Business Directory?
Well, the African-American Business Directory will be able to pick them up at various locations around in Portland. It won't be out until February, and there's going to be a big event on the 18th up in in Seattle. And we'll have them at various cafes and restaurants, including Talking Drum Bookstore.
Okay, and that's right, because it covers not only Portland, but Seattle. Any other cities in there? I know it's Seattle and Portland.
And Tacoma as
And Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have found that very, very useful over the years, so I'm glad that you mentioned that.
All right, this brings us to the end of another Black Book Talk.
And the end of another year.
Yes.
So, hope you've enjoyed being with us for the past year. We're hoping that you'll get lots of good reading material under your Christmas tree or your holiday tree. And maybe not even a tree, but during the holidays.
When we next come to you, it will be 2011.
My goodness, this has been a great year. We really appreciate it. How long have we been affiliated with Black Book Talk on KBOO now?
Oh, I feel like it's been at least, I feel like it's been about 10 years.
How many years have you been here?
I've been here 14 years, but I didn't start out immediately.
13 years?
13 years?
Yes.
Wow. Well, good reading to you, and thanks for the support of our audience for 13 years.
Yes.
We're looking for more.
All right. Enjoy the holidays.